thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to be in the Gospel of Luke in the 19th chapter. Luke, the 19th chapter. And everybody who has the name Luke is saying, ah, that's cool. Luke, the 19th chapter. We've been on the subject of encounters now. This is our third week, and we're going to continue with that as the Lord leads us, but we've set aside 9 weekends to deal with this subject of encounters. And we're looking in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and the various encounters that Jesus had with individuals or groups of people. And we're kind of researching, looking at what were some of the reasons for the encounters, because I believe that every step that Jesus took, every place that he went, he had purpose, had reason behind it. His ministry was really only 3.5 years long, although his life was 33 plus years. His public ministry was a very short period of time. He had a lot to accomplish, and he accomplished a lot. So what can we learn from those encounters? And so that's kind of what we've been looking at. Now, as you look at the scriptures, and I've been doing it every week as we're going through this, and looking and reading the different encounters that Jesus had with individuals, you would have to say that every one of them was certainly a revelation of God and his will and his love and his grace. Certainly that blind man that had an encounter with Jesus, I'm sure that he not only leapt for joy that particular day, but for the rest of his life, he was thankful to Jesus. The woman with the blood issue who made her way through the crowd and touched his garment, and Jesus turned around and focused his eyes on her. That was certainly an encounter that she'll never forget. Or the Samaritan woman where Jesus actually went out of his way to go someplace where he shouldn't have been. And he met that woman at the well, had an encounter with her that changed her life, and really the life of many in that particular city. And then there was Nicodemus on the other end, a religious man who came to Jesus at the nighttime because he was fearful of his peers. And he had an encounter with Jesus, one that has affected each and every one of us, where we hear the words, "You must be born again." And I think all of these encounters you could label as what can really compare with it. But there is an encounter, or there are several incidents that I think it's probably, you would say, truly, this was a time that each and every one of us would enjoy having with Jesus. And that's when Jesus came to dinner at someone's house. How many know that would be quite an encounter? When Jesus would literally come to your house and have dinner, sit down and have dinner with you. So I would be a little bit different than being part of the crowd as Jesus passed by, or part of the multitudes around the Sea of Galilee, but that you would have his undivided attention, so to speak, in rooms that weren't all that big anyway, and Jesus would be sitting there and having dinner with you. And there are several incidents of that. There was a time when the Pharisees themselves invited Jesus, probably curious and wanted to question him more about who he was. They invited him to dinner, and this woman showed up unexpectedly and changed the whole atmosphere of that dinner. There was a dinner at Martha and Mary's house. We know that Jesus spent time there from time to time, and there was a time when they were fixing him a meal. And then there was that dinner, the Passover meal that Jesus had with his 12 disciples just before he suffered and died. That's one that they will never forget. And so I want to talk about one of those incidents today that we find in Luke chapter 19, but kind of let me set it up, if you will. I headed out, but the direction that I had putting this particular message together was that as we were talking about encounters and how they deal with lordship, if you remember, that's what we were talking about. We open up by saying out of Matthew, where you call me Lord, Lord, but yet you don't do the things that I tell you to do. And we were trying to research and what was Jesus actually saying there. It's a very confusing verse sometimes. So when we talk about lordship, I begin to realize that lordship is really goes both ways. That if you make a decision for Jesus, not only to be your Savior, but your Lord, or master of your life, ruler of your life, number one in your life, not only are we submitting ourselves to Him, but in a way, He's committing Himself to us. If you make me Lord, I'm going to take care of the rest of your life. There's almost a commitment. There's almost a covenant God is making with us that you'll be safe. You just put me number one, and I'll take care of all your needs, your material needs, your emotional needs, your mental needs, your spiritual needs. I'll take care of them. So you find this lordship thing, and guess who's the real benefactor of that whole thing? We are. We certainly have a lot more needs than God has. But the point being this is that God wants to take care of our needs because we matter to God. And I want to talk about that today. When Jesus comes to dinner, I think one of the things that He's trying to convey to each and every one of us is how much you matter to God. So we're going to deal with that subject today. Now, why is this important to understand that we matter to God? Because I truly believe that all of us fight the battle of insecurities in one way or another. We are all insecure. Now, you might be sitting there and say, well, I don't think that's me. I think you're wrong. We all have insecurities. The truth is, one of the deepest needs in life is to feel secure. No doubt about it. To feel valued, if you will, or to feel valuable. Feel like life matters, that it counts, that it's significant, that I'm not some sort of zero passing through this life unnoticed, but I really want to have some significance. You want, I want my life to matter. No question about it. You want your life to have some kind of value, some kind of significance to it. Now, because of this battle of insecurities, we kind of get in a trap. And it's a trap I think the world has set up for us. And if we're not conscious of this and we actually more assertive, if you will, in taking some steps to not remain in this trap, we're going to have to do some things about it. But this trap is we're constantly doing two things as we make our way through life. We are evaluating and we're comparing ourselves. We find ourselves evaluating and comparing ourselves. We do it all the time. We do it consciously and we do it subconsciously or unconsciously. Comparing yourself to other people. And we end up comparing everything. If you just stop a moment, you look back at this week or this past month. How many times have we evaluated ourselves? How many times have we compared ourselves to others? Now, the problem even gets greater here, and the trap even deeper, is the way we do judge ourselves. And the way we do judge ourselves has kind of been set up, this is what's been set up by the world or the culture that we're in. And the way the world tells us that we need to live our lives is 100% wrong. 100% wrong. You see, your value is not based on what the world says about you, it's based on what God says about you. That's why we need to talk about this. The world's trying to put a value on you. And they have a system which you evaluate yourself. We'll talk about that. Now, when you follow each encounter of Jesus and you really look into it, there's an overriding truth that every encounter was designed to send a clear message. We matter to God. He didn't come to condemn. He didn't come to point out our wrongs and how short we've fallen. No, He didn't. He came to save us. He came to heal us. He came to deliver us. He came to set us free from the trap that we found ourselves in. Yes, from our sin. Does He agree with our sin? No, He doesn't agree with our sin. But that's not the first thing He points out to us. I think the truth is He wants to know you matter to me. You have some value to me. I created you with purpose. I created you to have significance. And we need to understand that. Now, the world's way, and there's four ways we judge our worth. if you really look at it. Number one, we judge our worth by appearance. How do I look? How do I look? As I'm thinking about that right now, I'm thinking about this morning. I didn't intend to say this, but that's one of the things I said to my wife, does this look okay with this? You know, and she came out with something on, which she didn't intend to have the pants that she had on, but she had this other top on that didn't go with it. I said, are you wearing that with that? You know, I was real nice about it, and of course we were joking back and forth, and the way I left the house was this. She was in the closet, I turned out the light, and I shut the door. I said, you're in timeout. And I left. This was a whole joking thing. I don't know why. How do I look? We think if I look good, then I must be good. If I don't look so good, then I must not be so valuable. I must not be important. Our society, our culture, if you will, has an entire industry that is built on the idea that your value is based on your appearance. Have you noticed, I noticed it more in the last month or so, and I don't know why, and maybe it's because Hollywood is doing, they give out these awards, and they're all kind of different awards that they give out, but one of the main attractions, it's not the award that people are getting. Do you know what they focus in on? All the news, all the media, all the TV shots, is how people look when they came to get their awards. Oh, look at her dress. Look at his outfit. They talk about the designer. They talk about how much it costs. That's the world's way. They're projecting that before, so we watch that, and wow. Now, here's the problem. Is there aren't that many stunning people in the world. Most people are average looking. Most people are just like you and just like me. We're normal. Turn to someone and say, I think you look pretty good. As normal, not so stunning, you look pretty good. Oh, maybe we won't go that far. So appearance. The second way which we find ourselves judging is our affluence, what I own. There's this myth of materialism, if you will. If I have a lot of things, then I must be worth a lot. If I don't have a lot, then I'm not worth much as a person. I'll tell you a little secret. Never connect your self-worth with your net worth. Your value and your valuables have nothing to do with each other. I've said this before, but the greatest things in life are not things. So affluence. Thirdly, achievement. What have I accomplished? If I get a lot of things done, I feel good about myself. So you find people that they're trying to achieve by proving they're worthwhile. And you end up with workaholics. You end up with people who are driven all the time because they're trying to reach goals, and they figure, if I can just achieve more, if I can just do more, then I'm going to be worth more. And the fourth one is approval. How well am I liked? If I'm liked a lot, then I must be worth a lot. Man, this starts way back on the playground. All of these things that I just mentioned. It's not an adult thing. It goes way, way back. And because it goes so far back, we deal with it all our lives. How many know that that'll wear you down? I don't care who you are. That kind of living, that kind of judging, getting caught in that kind of trap. You see, and that's what Jesus came into the midst of. People were judging themselves, evaluating themselves, comparing themselves, and really seeking the wrong things to get approval. Spend a lot of life. You know, and there, how many people spend all their life trying to get approval from someone they'll never get approval from? It's really true. That father, that mother, that individual it might be. And sooner or later, you need to come to the realization, hey, I'm not going to get that approval. Your worth is not based on what other people think. What we need to do is learn to trust God. Now, here's the truth. See if it be true in your life. You tend to base how you feel about you on what you think the most important person in your life thinks about you. So here's what I highly recommend, if that's a truth, and I believe it is. Make Jesus Christ the most important person in your life. That's a real key, what I just said there. Make Jesus Christ the most important person in your life. Because when you find out what he thinks about you, you're going to be okay. Because his thoughts toward you are not evil. They're good thoughts. His design for you is to have a good future. He set it up that way. He'll tell you the truth. He'll love you unconditionally. He won't love you with, I love you if, or I'll love you because. He just said, I love you. So we need to avoid the trap of appearance, affluence, achievement, and approval. They're unstable. They're unreliable sources of security. Here's another truth. Beauty fades. How many found out that first thing this morning? Possessions wear out. Successes are surpassed. No matter what goal you set for yourself and you reach, there's going to be someone come along who's going to beat it. What record you set. No matter what you do, other people are going to reject you. You know, that's not your problem. That's their problem. Don't get hung up with it. One thing I've come to understand and see is that every encounter that Jesus had with man, if you go through them and do it on your own, it was to reveal to us how much God mattered to us. When you see yourself as God sees you, man, something happens. It transforms you. It'll change your life. It'll set you free. It sets you free from the expectations of others. It sets you free from the grip of materialism. It sets you free from the pressure of workaholism. And the great example we have is the text that I ask that you turn to, and that's of a man named Zacchaeus. I want to look at this, if you will. Zacchaeus, it's found in Luke chapter 19, and it's just 10 verses there. But it's one of these encounters. I think this is an encounter that really points out how much we really matter to God. Then Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus who was chief tax collector, and he was rich. He sought to see who Jesus was, but he could not because of the crowd, for he was of short stature. So he ran. He ran ahead and climbed into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up. He saw him and said to him, Zacchaeus, make haste, come down, for today I must stay at your house. So he made haste and he came down and received him joyfully. But when they saw it, they all complained, saying, he has gone to be a guest with a man who is a sinner. Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, 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 interesting words. I give half of my goods to the poor, and if I've taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold. Jesus said to him, today, salvation has come to this house because he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and save that which was lost. Of the four traps or four ways in which we find our judging ourselves, because this is the way the world judges, this guy struck out on three of them. Really did. He was short. Bible says he was short in stature. If you really do a little bit of research on that and read the commentaries, he was abnormally short. It's quite possible he was a little person. Can you imagine being a little person? And it's unfortunate it happens even to this day. Can you imagine how the rest of the children looked at him? And the nicknames that he probably picked up from the time he began to play with his neighborhood kids. Teasing, the ridicule. One of my grandsons has two older siblings, and when I go over to the house, we used to go over the house, and of course the first is, hey, little man, come, and you know, you just would love, you just say, hey, little guy. He doesn't want you to call him little guy. Not at all. We got that right away. So you have to be very careful and catch yourself and say, hey, big guy, come and jump in my arms. So you can imagine what Zacchaeus went through. Hurtful, cruel nicknames. He wasn't liked by anybody. His approval factor in the city was zero. He was a tax collector. They didn't like tax collectors. Nobody likes tax collectors. I don't think anyone here goes down to the IRS and says, come on over for dinner. While you're there, would you do an audit? Now, if you work for the IRS, I feel sorry for you. No, I really, it's not really pointing anything for Now, the way tax collection worked in those days, and here's why it became so unpopular, is that, you see, the Romans demanded so much money from, depending on the population, the census was taken in that city. If you were a tax collector, you would know that amount, but it was okay for you to collect as much as you wanted to. So they would collect above what the Romans desired from them or wanted demanded from them, and they would become rich as a result of it. So because of this, he was kind of like a mafia extortionist in the city. But on top of that, he was a Jew. And being a Jew, no self-respecting Jew would be a tax collector. He was the chief of tax collectors. So he had an appearance problem because he was short, and he had an approval problem because of what he did. Now, Zacchaeus, we come to understand, doesn't even like himself. And the reason we know this is that at the end, when Jesus touches his life, has an encounter with him, one of the first things he does is he begins to repent and make up for what he did. So he did not like himself. He was well aware of what he was doing. So he doesn't like himself. He got his wealth from stealing. I found out that you can't be happy and guilty at the same time. He had guilt. He had shame. He hid it. He had lost all self-respect. He didn't like his life. He was lonely. He was a very unhappy man, hopeless, if you will. But in one single encounter, what happens? His life has changed. That encounter, it was with Jesus. Of all the people that Jesus chooses, there were the crowds that were lining the streets in Jericho. I've been on those streets, and you could just see the crowds, and he has to run, and he has to kind of get above the crowd. But of all the people, the most unloved, the most disrespected, the most evil, the most unappreciated person in the whole city, Jesus stops. There had to be a reason for it. I think in our day right now, we benefit from that encounter. We read into this and we say, if Jesus stopped for Zacchaeus, maybe he's stopping for me. He looked up and he said, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house. How much you matter to God. Let me give you four things. Four things that I see in this story of how much we matter to God. And that is, number one, no matter how small I feel, Jesus notices me. He's very wealthy, but he's very lonely. Zacchaeus does two things that no Middle Eastern wealthy man would ever do. First of all, he runs. That was not acceptable. Second of all, he climbs a tree. No self-respecting Middle Eastern businessman would climb a tree. Imagine. He had this feeling. He knew he was short. He was little. I'm short. I'm overlooked most of the time. Most of the time, when people came to meet with Zacchaeus, they did not look him in the face, in the eyes. It was not a good encounter. So possibly for the first time in his life, maybe, someone stops and looks at him. It was an overwhelming thing for Zacchaeus. So overwhelming that when he got to the bottom of the tree, it says that he received him joyfully. It was the only joy that probably came to his life ever. I'm significant. Jesus knew exactly where Zacchaeus was. Let me say this as we're at this particular point. I don't know what you're going through right now. I have no idea. I don't know. You may feel like you're up a tree financially. You may feel like you're out on a limb relationally. You may feel like you're in a hole spiritually and that nobody knows you're there. But God. God knows where you are. And guess what? He's paying attention. He notices you. He always has his eye on you because you matter to God. In the Gospel of Luke chapter 12, when God was also teaching us something else, it says that God never overlooks a single sparrow. He pays even greater attention to you down to the last detail, even numbering the hairs on your head. And yes, some of us have made that easier on the Lord. You know what the greatest expression of love is? It's not buying someone an expensive gift, for sure. The greatest expression of love is paying attention. Think about that for a moment. One of the most hurtful things in life is when someone doesn't pay attention to you. You ever notice how much attention kids want? They want your attention. One of my grandchildren says, "Papa, I want to tell you something. Papa, I want to tell you something." So no matter what I'm doing, he'll say it 20 times in a row. He wants my attention when he tells me that something. People all around you are craving attention. We live in a world that is craving that kind of attention. There are hurting people all around. In your family, in your extended family, at the workplace, when you get gas, when you come to church. You know, when we come to church here, we don't come to a place where people are perfect or don't have hurts. Matter of fact, the more hurting someone is, the more we want them to be here because we know that Jesus pays attention. We ought to be involved in that. Second of all, no matter who ignores me, Jesus knows me. Everybody ignored Zacchaeus. Nobody wanted to be his friend, seen with him, let alone eat with him. Not only does Jesus notice you, 1 in 6 billion people, he knows you. Look what he did. He called Zacchaeus by name. What a shock. How did he know my name? You see, God not only knows where you are, he knows who you are. You know what the word Zacchaeus means? Pure one. Isn't that interesting? I don't think he's been called pure one for a long time. But here's what Jesus does. He looks up into that tree, and what does he see? He sees pure one. He affirms his potential rather than pointing out his past. Let me say that again. He affirms his potential rather than pointing out his past. Jesus often did this. He talked to the masses even. He said, "You are the light of the world." They weren't the light of the world at that time. "You are the salt of the earth." They weren't the salt of the earth. But he saw their potential. He was reminded of, this is what you were created for. Jesus sees your potential. He didn't come to point out your past. Parents, we should learn something. Don't label your kids. Help them see what they can become. There's a fine line. We want our kids to know what is right, and we want them to know what is wrong. But you have to be so delicate, so sensitive, so in tune with God's Spirit, because you don't want to label them. You have to be so careful. You want to help them see what they can become. So there are many times you don't tell it like it is, tell it like it can be. Guys, I thought of this. If you want your wife to treat you like a king, then treat your wife like a queen. Jesus looked at Zacchaeus and he doesn't point out his flaws. He says, "Hey, pure one, come on down." Jesus' encounters were not to scold. If you look at him, that's not what he did. He came to give an answer. Here's the hope that you have. Here's what I came to do. So no matter how insignificant I feel, Jesus notices me. No matter how things go wrong in my life and people ignore me, Jesus knows me. Thirdly, no matter what I've done, Jesus wants me. No matter what I've done, Jesus wants me. I'm going to be a guest in your house. Jesus knows that he's filled with guilt, shame, never thought of himself worthy enough to have Jesus in his home. I'm sure that he knew that Zacchaeus entertained thoughts like, I've done too many bad things. I'm not good enough to have a relationship with Jesus. I don't deserve it. We fight those battles. But Jesus takes the initiative. He goes to Zacchaeus and he says, come down. And guess what? Jesus already took the initiative for you. He didn't wait for us to change and clean up our lives. While you were yet in sin, Christ died. He took the initiative. Why? Because all of us have sinned. All of us come short of the glory of God. That's just the way it is. You know, I have a $50 bill here. How many would like this $50 bill? Okay. You want this $50 bill? Okay. How many still want this $50 bill? You still want it? I'm going to do something really gross here. How many want this $50 bill? Really? Wow. How many want this $50? Both pieces. You do? How many want this $50 bill? You still want it? Wow. Do you know why you want it? No matter how crumbled, spit on, stomped on, torn, this $50 bill never lost a cent of its value. And that's how Jesus sees us. The world will crumble you, spit on you, step on you, tear you, shred you up. But guess what? Jesus still loves us. That's the way he loves Zacchaeus. The world is painted another picture. God's out to get us somehow. If you give your heart to Christ, you're just going to have to give all this up. He's going to make it miserable. And yet I find Jesus, he just wants a relationship with me. Oh, does he agree with my sin? No. He loves me too much to agree with the way I'm doing things. But when you encounter Jesus and something happens miraculous in your life, it's all just going to happen. Jesus is more interested in changing than he is condemning. I stand at the door and knock, he said. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and guess what? Dine with him and he with me. In the Middle East, coming to supper was the height of fellowship. When you came to someone for dinner, even to this day, when you have dinner, when you have that kind of fellowship, you just don't eat and leave. You hang around, you talk, you share things. It's a great thing. The fourth thing we find here in this story, no matter what others say about me, Jesus affirms me. When they saw it, or the others were around, they all complained. He has gone to be with a man who is a sinner. Everybody saw him as a sinner, but Jesus saw him as a pure one. Was he a sinner? Yes. But did Jesus see him that way? No, not first. That's not what he saw. Jesus sees your potential, folks. He sees what you were created to be. God doesn't make junk. He knows you. He knows where you're at. He knows your name. He knows the plans that he has for you. Not evil, but a good future. He knows all of these things. And the enemy is wants to keep us in that trap that we find ourselves in. And that's why Jesus came. He didn't come to seek and save those who were healthy. He came to seek and save those who needed a physician. He affirms me. What does Jesus do? He defends him. He goes this far. You have to understand what he said here. He said, he also is a son of Abraham. They have thrown him out. They have cut him off. Zacchaeus is not one of them. He's not allowed in the synagogue. He's not allowed to fellowship with them. He's not even allowed to call himself a Jew. He is just, and Jesus in front of them all, he also is a son of Abraham. The gasp that must have been in that room. But he was defending Zacchaeus. I'll tell you, when Jesus is defending you, you don't have to worry. He affirms, he defends, he protects. The moment that Jesus called Zacchaeus to come down, it says he received him with joy. Oh, what a joyful experience when you encounter Jesus that way. Zacchaeus was changed as a result of the encounter with Jesus. Look at, he immediately says, Lord, Lord. I thought that's interesting. You're now my Lord. I give half my possessions to the poor, and if I cheated anyone, I'll give back four times as much. Let's look at this story one more time. He notices me. He knows me. He wants me. And he affirms me. I don't know where you're at here today, but I know what you need is an encounter with Jesus. Would you stand with me, please?
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.